Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On this 40th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King, here is Michael Eric Dyson, frequent guest, Georgetown sociology professor, author of a new book, April 4th, 1968, Martin Luther King's Death and How It Changed America from Basic Civitas Books. He also has an op-ed in the LA Times today about how Barack Obama and Jeremiah Wright represent King's own split mind about race. And Dr. Dyson, welcome back to WNYC, unfortunately, on one of the most tragic anniversaries in American history.
Well, thanks for having me, and you're absolutely right. It is one of the most tragic days where the blood of a prophet mixed with the ground of our common life together, and yet sprouting from that has been some remarkable developments and some depressing consequences.
On your op-ed piece first, if I might, you think King had some Jeremiah Wright in him?
No, the question is, does some Jeremiah Wright have some King in him? Dr. King was a very prophetic person who would have been reviled and, in one sense, said to be an anti-American, an un-American, were people to hear what he said. If YouTube was around when Dr. King lived, they would have dismissed him. For instance, he said, "I am not interested in standing on the plantation or the reservation any longer. I think that in American society, we might get treated like the Japanese, who were put on in concentration camps during World War II. I'm not interested in that any longer." He says, "I have been on that reservation too long." He said, "America is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today." He said, "We are criminals in the war in Vietnam." He said, "America began in genocide." The last sermon he was going to preach when he was murdered, and in his effects was found a notepad, or at least an envelope, which scratched on it the name of the sermon for the next week, and it was entitled "Why America May Go to Hell." Hmm. That's the kind of Martin Luther King Jr. we don't know about and don't hear about.
That was the actual wording, "Why America Might Go to Hell"?
"Why America May Go to Hell" is the name of the sermon he was going to preach.
So a straight line from there to Jeremiah Wright's "Goddamn America"?
Well, I think it's pretty straight. I think there's no question about it. And you can't extract these, you know, rhetorical flourishes of the prophetic expressions of black churches out of their original context. You got to see the whole thing. Martin Luther King Jr. preached differently when he spoke to mainstream white America than when he spoke to black America. He was more able to tell the truth and what was on his mind. He could anticipate an implicit understanding in the black church where he didn't have to break stuff down the same way that he could break it down in a white church or white setting, and therefore he was able to communicate more immediately and more directly his beliefs about America.
You write about two Martin Luther Kings as being pre- and post-1965, and the second King was the more skeptical about America. What changed for him in 1965?
Well, he saw that the Civil Rights Bill and the Voting Rights Act were basically not substantive enough to change the lifestyles and the life worlds and expectations of the poor. Dr. King said, "This is surface stuff. It's not going to go down to the depths. It will not be able to penetrate the lower depths of Negro deprivation." And so he said, "We've got to move toward radical transformation of America, a revolution of values, and we've got to figure out a way to make real the promises of democracy for those who are besieged and vulnerable." And as a result of that, he shifted toward an economic program, and he talked about the distribution of wealth, the radical redistribution of wealth, and the massive redistribution of economic prosperity. And so he began to challenge dominant culture and capitalism, talking about a democratic socialism. He said, "I won't say that in public, but that's what we need to do," and a reorganization of the logic of American economies. He was very serious about that, and that made him much far more skeptical. Also, he said, "I hate to conclude in 1967 that most Americans are unconscious racists." This is a different King who was now chastened by the realities that confronted him and the devastating structural persistence of the inequality that he thought would go away. Mm.
Why right then, though? Because that was the very moment after the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and after the Voting Rights Act of 1965, why wasn't he celebrating, at least for a period of time, the willingness of America to change and then waiting to see how the new laws change things before indulging that dark side?
Well, it's because he turned out to be right, right? First of all, he was right. Secondly, he anticipated that it would not go deep enough. Dr. King anticipated right where we are today. His beliefs and skepticism have proved to be true. There is a yawning abyss between the have-gots and the have-nots. The persistence of radical economic inequality for the black poor is unfortunately as accurate as King imagined it. Because, and a lot of people want to ascribe it to, oh, they're lazy, they don't want to work, welfare has made them dependent and the like, but they refuse to look at what is beneath their noses, the massive redistribution of wealth through not government handouts, but the accurate representation of the interests of the people through distributing tax dollars better. I mean, this argument about universal health care is really about redistributing wealth in a serious way. This argument that the working class is being overtaxed while the rich classes are being undertaxed, this is all the manifestation of Dr. King's skepticism about the changes that would occur. He said, look, if you're middle class and upper middle class, you're going to be great. And you know what? He's right. He also said, though, if you're beneath middle class status and you are working poor in this country, you will suffer. And he has turned out to be right. The reason he couldn't wait is because he believed in the fierce urgency of now. He knew he didn't have long to live. And so he had to, thus saith the Lord, he had to ring the prophetic bell loud enough for people to hear. And it continues to reverberate in our own day and age.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with my guest, Michael Eric Dyson, Georgetown sociology professor. His new book, April 4th, 1968, Martin Luther King Jr.'s Death and How It Changed America. In your book, you link Martin Luther King's assassination to what you call a tradition of black death. Do I have that wording right? Is there
Absolutely.
Such a thing?
Yeah, no doubt. I think that, I link it both to a tradition of black death from a dominant society where lynching, murders, castrations, the flowing of blood, 1,000 lynchings per year, well into the 20th century, indicated that the black death was a staple of the American imagination. The necessity for black blood to flow was part and parcel of the self-definition of American society for so long. Then there was the absorption and recirculation of some of that self-destructive stuff within black America itself. So black-on-black homicide in crime is but a pale reflection, and a devastating one to be sure, of a deeper, more profoundly entrenched tradition of black bodies swinging on the end of ropes. That strange fruit about which Billie Holiday sang is a part of our own collective unconscious that continues to fuel our perceptions about black life and black death, and I think has a negative and very harmful effect upon how we perceive black people to this day.
You're an Obama supporter. You're public about that.
Yes, sir.
Saw you on television with your wife doing the James Carville, Mary Madeline thing, because you're an Obama supporter. She's a Clinton supporter.
Right, right.
And you describe Obama in your book as both a fulfillment of King's vision and a pioneer into new territory. Where's that line?
Well, he, in one sense, the fulfillment, because the fact that he's running for the presidency is a significant moment to acknowledge that this tremendous transformation that has occurred. So there's no doubting that. There's no gainsaying that. And Martin Luther King Jr. would be the first to acknowledge it, as many of his apostles, Andrew Young, Jesse Jackson, John Lewis, and the like, would acknowledge. On the other hand, he is pioneering new territory because he's striking out for the territory, so to speak, of a new investment in black identity, and that is that we could trust a black person to be the president of the United States. This is new territory because he's the first very serious candidate. Jesse Jackson was a serious candidate. He was the first black person who ran for the presidency who won primaries, and he got 7 million votes in 1988. And 3.5 million in 1984. So the point is, this Barack Obama phenomenon is remarkable. It's authentic. It's powerful, and it's an expression of a new thing that we've got going on here. But what's interesting is that if we see Barack Obama through the prism of Martin Luther King Jr.'s projections about what was possible were we to allow freedom to ring and our imaginations to be unfettered by the bigotries of race, then Barack Obama represents that. But at the same time, the irony is that he's being tethered now in the American imagination with his pastor, who represents the darker, more skeptical, more radical Martin Luther King Jr., who is equally as interesting and powerful and necessary if real freedom is to be achieved.
But when you compare Obama to Jesse Jackson, I mean, Bill Clinton's South Carolina moment, saying Jesse Jackson won there too,
right,
wasn't it so offensive precisely because it equated Jackson, who was sort of a professional civil rights leader, with Obama, who is running with a more general portfolio of American issues.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But Jesse Jackson was running with those portfolio of issues too, but he was marginalized and ghettoized. See, when black people go to a white movie, they see universality. They see themselves in that movie. It doesn't have to be a black character in it at all. They still resonate with it. White Americans have not been taught to see universality in black particularity. So Jesse Jackson was arguing in 1984 and in 88 for a raft of progressive issues that would suit the country well. And the tragedy is he was marginalized and ghettoized. And the tragedy of what Bill Clinton did was that he reinforced that ghettoization and that narrow reading of Jesse Jackson, ironically enough, from a man who was himself, Bill Clinton, ostensibly committed to breaking down racial barriers. It proved the trickiness and the slipperiness of such a pursuit. So Barack Obama is possible because Jesse Jackson existed. Jesse Jackson is the linebacker who had to brutally engage in opening up a hole so that the graceful line running back Barack Obama could run through that hole. Make no mistake, they're both related.
Let me ask you about something else you wrote on Jackson in your book. I found this really interesting. And Jesse Jackson, of course, very relevant to the history of today because he was at King's side when he was killed. On Jackson, you call him the most original thinker to emerge in civil rights circles.
Right.
But I think he has a reputation, certainly by now, of being in a kind of conventional civil rights paradigm that people like Barack Obama and Cory Booker maybe are moving beyond.
Yeah, well, look, original thinker in the sense that Martin Luther King Jr. called upon, as a genius of American social rhetoric, the resources of white liberalism to articulate back to white America what it needed to hear. That was his genius. Jesse Jackson, without the intellectual, or should I say academic pedigree, of Martin Luther King Jr., had to dig deep into the archives of black folk culture, of American civic rhetoric, of the virtue discourse that was critical to religious traditions, and, you know, bind those together to articulate a vision that would hold together not only black people, but at least speak to the interests of a broader constituency that was progressive. So there's no doubt that a Cory Booker and a Barack Obama build upon that legacy and tradition. But in one sense, it can't be said to be original with them because they're now hewing much more closely to an America that resonates with white Americans. I don't know what's new about that. That is even more deeply traditional. That's more profoundly mainstream. It may be different than Jesse Jackson and Martin Luther King Jr., but it's much closer to the white American mainstream, which is why it resonates with them. So that's less original than what Jesse Jackson or certainly Martin Luther King Jr. was offering.
Dr. Dyson, are you almost portraying Dr. King as a spinmeister in what you've been saying here, you know, that he said one thing to white audiences and other things to black audiences, that he told white liberals what they needed to hear, you know, when we tend to see him as more of a moral universalist?
Yeah, well, this moral universalism is a tricky question. It's not that he was a spinmeister. He understood, however, in the negative sense of that term, but in the positive sense, he was an opportunist in the best sense of that word. He understood what white folk could hear. Look, if Jeremiah Wright is causing a firestorm, what do you imagine Martin Luther King Jr. would have caused had he spoken that way to the white mainstream? So again, he's proved right, because white people barely can hear the pain, agony, anger, frustration, or the remarkable resistance of black people. How absurd is it to kick black people out of the black church a couple hundred years ago? That's how the black church started. Many white Americans don't understand that the black church started in politics because the white church subordinated its theology to its politics. So it kicked black people out. So you kick people out, then you want them to speak the way you want them to speak, even though you diss them. So you diss them, you dishonor them, you degrade and demoralize them, and yet you expect them to honor you in their speech. Of course black people are going to be upset and angry in their church context, although they are seriously American and love God. My point simply is this, that Martin Luther King Jr. understood what he needed to do to give a message. He was not being duplicitous. He believed it in his heart. But he understood that in certain contexts, he had to package and translate his truth in such a fashion that it would resonate in a particular way so that the people whose ears were hearing those words could hear them. That's his genius.
Last thing, and I know you have to run to the airport. In your opinion, would anything be different in America today if King had not been assassinated? Would there be more justice or equality or lower unwed birth rates or anything else that you decry in your book about America today if this one man had lived?
No, I think that had he lived, we wouldn't be celebrating him. He would be marginalized. He would be seen as a pariah, which is what he was seen as when he was murdered. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1968, most people forget, on April 4, 1968, was not an American hero. He was being dissed by the Washington Post, the New York Times. He was being dissed by U.S. News and World Report, Time, and Newsweek. He was being dissed by black leaders like Roy Wilkins and Whitney Young for his stand on Vietnam. They stripped him of his Nobel Prize rhetorically. They denied his doctoral degree. They cast him as an anti-American, unpatriotic fool who had no business meddling in public and in foreign policy.
So his death changed America more than his life would have?
Oh, absolutely, brother. The blood of the martyr swept away the foul stench of his marginalization and resurrected him as a king and a prince of a man. Now look, January 15, 1929, if we use these biblical terms in Christian viewpoint, was Christmas. April 4, 1968 is Easter. Resurrection, death, crucifixion, and then the possibility of new life. That's what this April 4, 1968 date is all about.
Michael Eric Dyson's new book is called April 4, 1968, Martin Luther King Jr.'s Death and How It Changed America. Dr. Dyson, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, listen to the man.
God, Father.
Hey there.
Oh, bless. Jobs going down. It ain't no fucking job to be found.